Hi, welcome to Newsys Investment Insights. This week we are going to have a look at the semiconductor sector. So it's a really large sector, makes a huge difference to a huge proportion of the world market, and very little in Australia. And so I really wanted to sort of just focus in because there's so many things going on in this sector. It's well worth sort of starting from the scratch and just sort of looking at it from a sort of first principles basis, and considering what we have within that sector. Just a quick note that everything you're hearing today is general information. None of it's personal advice. If you do want personal advice, look, register on our website, give us a call, and we can sort you out on that front. So without sort of any further ado, we'll jump straight into the slides. We have a fair bit to run through, but I think the main thing I wanted to focus on is just this idea, initially for investors, is it's a hard one to avoid, and particularly for Australian investors, where it makes up almost nothing of the Australian stock market. It's the information technology sector as a whole is about 23% of the globe. It's the biggest single sector. It's twice the size of most other sectors. And that doesn't even include Google, Meta, Amazon, which are all in sort of different sectors. And so, so massive sector. The biggest part of that sector, or equal biggest part of that sector, you've basically got software, which is largely Microsoft, and then a bunch of other companies. And then just as big is the semiconductor sector. And that in that Australia's got effectively no exposure to that. And so the idea is that I really want to focus in for Aussie investors to say, look, this is where you do need that international investment. You're sort of giving up a quarter of what a quarter of the world market you're avoiding if you're not sort of invested in this sector. So I'm going to run through. So I thought what I'd do is run through what actually makes up this sector in a few different angles, and then run through as well the big factors that are affecting at the moment, because there is a lot of change going on, and obviously AI is top of the news cycles, but also there's a lot of geopolitics going on, and just looking at the earnings of this sector and what's happening within the earnings. So if you sort of broke it down into a number of different categories, you could sort of there's sort of like eight different parts to this from a what do companies do perspective. So at one side, at sort of at the right of the top, you have the intellectual property part of the sector, and that's people like Arm is probably one of the most well known there. And so what happens is someone like Apple wants chips. There's some of this the base sort of core design of that intellectual of those chips. The intellectual property is coming from companies that have developed it over time and are trying to develop new versions of it, and then they license it out to other people who want to sort of build on top of that. So you've got a number of companies within that. Then you sort of get down to this next level, which is the electronic design automation, and that's where Australia does have one, Altium, but there's Cadence, probably one of the biggest ones there. And what happens within those companies is the people who are designing chips then use that software in order to create the chips that are going to get made elsewhere. There's a whole bunch of specialized materials. Now, they're not even in this sector, so they sort of end up in the commodities sector. Generally, it's a lot of the gases that go into the factories that make these, or the actual materials. They're often sort of sitting within other sectors. Then you have this whole big section of the machines that make the machines, so to speak. So it's titled here the wafer fab equipment, but these are the companies. Probably there've been a little bit more in the press recently, but ASML is probably the biggest and most well known of those. Is a large Dutch company, and a number of other ones, Applied Materials and KLA and Lam, and all these other companies that sit within that, who effectively make the machines that go into the factories, and then the next level you have what you call the fabless sort of chip companies, and that makes up people like NVIDIA or Apple or Qualcomm or Amazon. And effectively what companies are doing now is, as opposed to, very different to how it was 20 years ago, is they're doing all the design. So it's effectively what you're seeing is they're buying often the intellectual property or licensing, sorry, the intellectual property for some of these. They're designing it all on somebody else's software. They're getting, you know, they're importing the commodities from somewhere else. And then these the machines that are making them are made by somebody else. And then these fabulous ones, they're not even going to do the manufacturing. They're going to then outsource that to sort of the some of the foundries a little bit lower down. And so it's really just an intellectual property exercise within this. And also it's showing how large and complex this whole structure has become, that is harder and harder for any one company to be able to do it all. There's a few companies that do still try and do the integrated device manufacturers, so that they do try and make lots of different parts of the chain. So you can probably divide that really into three. One is the memory parts, and so there's still quite a lot of people in the memory. There's three major companies in that memory that still do most of this chain themselves. There's the logic part where really you've only got Intel left, and most of the other companies have all gone to fabless. And then you've got the analog chips, a lot of the older, and you know, chips are still used in lots of different industrial processes and things, but I guess the complexity is lower, and so you don't need as much sort of, the process doesn't need to be as separated. Similar to that is these chip foundries, and that's Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing. It's probably the most well-known, Samsung as well. And so they're the ones actually making all those chips from Apple and Qualcomm. And then finally, there's this massive sort of part of it as well, which is the outsourced assembly and testing. And so within that, you know, I guess a single ASML machine that goes into one of these factories can cost you, you know, up to $150 odd million in terms of that. And so there's a lot that needs to go into that whole testing of making sure that thing's working, and you know, small problems and issues can be very, very expensive. And so there's a lot of money spent on that side. And the other thing is that the processes that go into these to making these chips can be extraordinary as well. So you can have, you know, 100, 150, 200 processes that go into the final production of a chip. And so if each one of those processes, you know, runs at a 99.9% efficiency rate, that sounds really good. But when you multiply that out, all of a sudden it turns into, you know, 50, 60% of your chips are being having to be thrown away because a problem in one of the processes, one of those 100 or 150 processes. And so the idea that you can get that down by the assembly and the testing part of it, and really bring that back is important in terms of that. And sorry, so that's the testing part. The assembly part's more than putting these together once you're so the people like the Foxconns and stuff like that. So yeah, so a large sort of very diversified group of companies that go into that and very much specializing within certain parts. And then the next part you get to is then there's and even within each of those sectors, you know, there's a lot of other there's a lot of parts that you look at where you can break it up by the end markets. So the biggest ones tend to be smartphones and personal computing. Consumer electronics is sort of sitting in there as well. This is a chart from ASML, which is just sort of showing some of the growth rates where that these are seeing within over the next 10 years or forecast to see over the next 10 years. And I think that some of the key things to note there is that, you know, most of these ones you can see on the chart are about 100 billion. It looks servers and data centers, you know, has gone from 100 billion to 150. It looks like over the next few years and accelerating. So that it'll be yeah, by far and away the largest. The expectation is over the next sort of five to 10 years. And the AI market, just to keep in context, you know, the AI market's probably going to be around about 100 billion this year. So sort of growing from almost nothing to you know, the same size as, say, the automotive market over such a short period of time. So we've really got this you know, this key focus on that sort of exploding in terms of growth. And so, you know, the questions are, you know, is it a bubble? Is there more behind this? And you know, what are the next steps to this sector? Who are the winners and the losers? And so I guess I wanted to, so that's sort of, that's roughly what's, you know, I guess a look at one of the components that go into, and the companies, I suppose, that go into the semiconductor sector, and then the sectors that they're servicing. But there's lots of other sort of ways you can slice and dice this as well. So one of the things to note is that, you know, there's a long history in terms of these companies of being very volatile and very cyclical, and potentially in some instances that's increasing, and in other ones it's decreasing. And so there's lots of changes within the markets themselves as well. And so, you know, just to give, I guess, a quick and a brief history is, I'm about to pop a chart up for anyone listening in to the podcast. It's basically just showing that the growth rates over time through the 1970s through to the 90s. And, you know, it's sort of growing at sort of 20 to 30%. For most of that period, but there's some pretty wild swings there from negatives up until sort of 50% growth in various years. And, you know, the key measure of that was that you really had a dominant US, and a lot of that was defense spending and the flow on from that defense spending. And then into the 80s and 90s, you really saw a rise in Japan and the Japanese companies really start to take over in terms of market share. And then as you sort of go through that, then you go through, you roll that through into the 2000s and in the 2000, around about the year 2000, we had this tech boom and the telecommunication companies also got, you know, really into this game as well. There wasn't a lot, in terms of the, so they're not even shown on a lot of these graphs, but what we saw was that their spending sort of doubled and tripled over that period. And they, as the rise of the internet and the telcos, you know, similar circumstance, you know, in the 2000s during that boom, the telcos were talking about their demand doubling every 100 days in terms of internet. And you know, OpenAI came out with something a couple of years ago talking about you know, it's demand for artificial intelligence calculations coming out, you know, doubling every 3 months. And so, you know, there's definitely sort of parallels in terms of, you know, the what we're seeing in terms of AI versus what we saw in coming up to that sort of 2000 level. And then we ran into the you know, 90s and 2000s and into the into the up into sort of 2020, where we really saw the rise of Taiwan and Korea as sort of major players in that market. And in a way, you know, the way a lot of the Taiwanese and Korean firms sort of got a foothold was a lot of the US companies or Japanese companies were outsourcing the lower end chips, and so and they're the ones you got to make a lot of, and whereas the higher end chips were the ones which they're sort of trying to keep themselves. But what would happen is, you know, as companies would move into it, say Taiwanese semiconductor manufacturing, they'd move in, they'd start doing lower end chips, and they'd start doing, you know, tens of millions of these things, and they'd get very good at that process of how do you speed things up. And then it just, because they were getting that sort of institutional knowledge, it then led them in up that complexity curve, and they started to do more and more complex manufacturing. And that's where sort of the US sort of gave up a lot of that, and Japan as well gave up a lot of that. And so there's a question about saying, well, you know, it might be good to try to outsource some of the lower value parts of your supply chain. But if you do so, are you then sort of ceding control to the next group who's then gets good at manufacturing in large quantities? And that's the argument we've got right now in terms of China and the rise of China into this really starting to affect these as well. And so China's got this real focus on what you'd call lagging edge chips. So they've been spending an incredible amount. It's one of Xi's you know, core focuses is trying to build up that semiconductor sector. They've been locked out of a lot of the advanced chips by the US. And so they really are spending a lot of money within that sector. And you know, there's a question about whether they can sort of, I guess, repeat what we saw within those other within the other sectors. It's worth noting as well the cyclicality. You do go through some pretty big upturns and downturns, and within company profitability, even more so. I've got two of the biggest ones on the next slide. For anyone sort of listing in, I'm just showing Intel and Micron, which are sort of two of the biggest companies over the sort of over the 2000s, 2020 sort of era. And you can see that both of them have regular periods where their earnings will double and then halve, or worse, you know, and especially in terms of Micron, you know, quite often into losses and then sort of shooting up to massive levels before falling 90% again. And so, you know, the chip cycles are big and they're savage. And, you know, the real thing within this is you pretty much are only as good as your latest hit. Some of the other features about the sector as well is it's pre sort of 1980s. We had this sort of one way path where what would tend to happen is the chips would start somewhere in the government, quite often the military. Then once they were sort of used and there a fair bit, they'd end up in business, and then eventually you'd end up in the hands of consumer. It's pretty much going the other way, and that's sort of been a little bit of a slow turnaround followed by an acceleration, and so now what we're seeing is a lot of it, where the consumer side is where all the latest and greatest stuff is, and then it feeds back into the business and then eventually back to the government. But yes, definitely a different market in terms of that. And I spoke about you know, only being as good as your latest hit, and that's that. I've got that just sort of a look up, looking at the Intel and the product life cycle, and just showing that, you know, for each processor that it has, you know, the expectation is that they're only lasting, you know, a couple of years before you grow roll into your next one. And so you know, the amount of R&D that goes into these companies is significant, and it's not always successful. It's not the biggest spender doesn't always win. So Intel's pretty much been the largest spender for most of the last decade, but are falling quite rapidly behind in a number of different technologies. That's part of this, the whole volatility behind the sector. We've saw these wild swings in earnings. What we've got is we've got that companies within this sector, they tend to, you know, prices get high. Say we're looking at memory, which is one of these sort of main cyclical sectors, and Micron is one of the companies I brought up, is a key player in that. And so what happens is the prices get high, the incumbent players all go out and build new factories, and the factories are getting increasingly bigger and bigger to generate these economies of scale. These massive factories come online and they're built, and so they may as well pump out as much as they can, and try and put some of their, you know, higher price competitors and then lower volume competitors out of business. And so then we go through these big price cycles where prices all fall away while these new factories sort of pump it out, and then demand gradually catches up, and we go through that same cycle again. So nobody wants to, everyone's been through this painful part of losing money, and so nobody wants to build a new factory, and they wait until their capacity gets to sort of 90% plus, and then they start building the new factories, and by that stage, you know, prices, if demand's now overtaken supply, and prices start to go high again, and you start that whole cycle again. So very much, you know, pretty much regardless of sector, you've got that. You know, certainly worse in some sectors versus others, but one of those sectors is the memory sector I spoke about, and so you've effectively got three different companies left in that. Now is Micron, SK Hynix, and Samsung. I've just got a chart up just showing how that's, you know, changed over the last sort of 50 years. And there's lots of companies that sort of rose and were pretty powerful in that sector. So you had sort of three or four companies, say in the US back in the 70s that would run it, and then they all got sort of their market share all got eaten up by other US companies, and then by a whole host of Japanese companies, and then by all these other smaller ones. And then you saw lots of consolidations and companies going out of business. And so you've got this sector, which highly cyclical over time. The players themselves will argue that, well, actually there's only three of us now, you know, make up 90% of the market. And so therefore there's going to be a lot less volatility than what you've seen in the past. It hasn't been true so far. But yeah, there is a potential that, that you will see sort of changes in some of these as oligopolies get that out finally, sort of take over and try and put pricing power through. Having said that, though, you know, it's this R&D game, and yeah, by and large, particularly with the rise of sort of Chinese, some Chinese companies sort of trying to break into these markets, it's unlikely these companies are going to try and keep prices high and allow other competitors to enter the market. So yeah, that sort of leads you back to that sort of similar cyclicality. And that's not the only sector you've seen that within. So if you look at so the foundry part, that was one of those other parts I spoke about, was if you look at the foundries that can do sort of the real leading edge chips, 20 years ago there was 17 different companies could do that, and then over the whole of the 2000s, you've just seen that number chipped away till we're down to effectively two companies that can do the can do that. Intel's hoping to get back into that, and you know, there's some other global foundries are sort of trying to get into this space as well. But you know, at the moment, your market structure is changing within these, and part of this is just coming from within all these companies is coming from the part that it used to be that, you know, maybe for $5 billion you could set up one of these factories or whatever component you're trying to do, and jump into and start selling into the world market. Whereas now you're starting to spend hundreds of millions of dollars, and so it's really limiting the companies that can stick with this. Yes, okay. So that's sort of these market structure changes. And the other big change, sort of an interesting one coming out of the reporting season in recent times, is this idea. You know, we've got this Moore's Law that's sort of overlaying this entire sector, which is that every few years we see a doubling of the efficiency of chips, and that's sort of been locked into to the way all companies are trying to chase it. And now they're starting to get down very much to the sort of bottom of it. That we're starting to have some problem with physics. The sizes are so small that they're getting to, is that without this sort of next jump into quantum computing, the question is how that, you know, are we starting to run into the limits of physics? And so some will talk about quantum computing, which is, over the next 10, 20 years, it looks like it'll be one of the next phases, but it's not ready for prime time yet. And potentially has some different issues in terms of which applications it'll be appropriate for or not. But there's also this other idea that, well, maybe Moore's Law exists at several levels, and it's sort of like a bit like a fractal. And so this is NVIDIA's sort of take on it, is maybe it's actually now the data center is actually becoming the next phase of where you're going to see doubling and tripling. So that, you know, maybe the chips themselves might not improve as much, but now it's actually about saying, how do I harness together multiple chips and multiple servers all into sort of data center levels, and maybe at the data center level we still will see that doubling of capacity, even if at the chip level it's not. And there's some quite innovative things going on at data center levels, particularly now that the AI and so much stuff's being transferred around, and just in terms of the, you know, how much could be packed into individual servers. And so there's certainly a lot of movement going on at that part as well. And if it's true that what NVIDIA is sort of envisaging, I guess, in terms of that, you're going on, stepping away from the chips and stepping back more into try to use, it's more about how you're bringing groups of chips together and making groups of chips that much more productive, is that, again, that's a significant change that you're seeing. And you can very much see all the old winners, you know, no longer be the winners, and a whole group of new companies sort of stepping up and becoming the sort of the next champions of the sector. So we've got dramatic change in a whole bunch of these things, structural change within that, and then that's even before we've sort of started to talk about the effect of geopolitics. So just jump forward a couple of slides. So, you know, I guess the thing to think about is that You know, are we into this similar scenario where we saw this internet tech boom? It was largely driven around that whole internet structure at the start, and then gradually moved on to companies and the productivity gains later. You know, are we seeing something similar in terms of AI? Is that we're seeing, you know, NVIDIA's and Broadcom's and some of the semiconductors that are heavily involved in the chips that are driving the AI? You know, are they the first leg of the boom, and then you're going to see that sort of next leg of the boom, and then finally, you know, some sort of crash before you finally see the real world effects and the productivity gains? And that's potential. I guess the I probably should have led with this at the outset, is sort of coming back to you know, what's the real headline here, is that it may be the start of a boom. Certainly the companies themselves look a little bit expensive, but they're getting these massive growth rates. There's a question about how sustainable those growth rates are is one of the big ones. But I guess there's two big things I'd highlight is one is these companies are not debt driven. So the stuff we saw during the tech boom in particular, we saw this massive amount of debt come in, particularly for the telcos. So it was sort of the first sort of leg of that. Yeah, there was a lot of, and then there's a lot of speculative equity raisings, and that sort of drove another cycle, drove the cycle even higher. But a lot of this was debt driven, and then there's a lot of margin lending as well behind all that. But I guess where I'm getting back to is, yeah, could you, if you're going to see an AI boom, and a rational bubble, sorry, boom's the wrong word. There is a boom going on. A bubble in terms of the stocks and the companies involved, and then the amount of money that's being spent, I guess, in terms of people raising money and then spending it, is that, you know, it's less of a worry when you're seeing, you look around the companies involved, and you basically, all the big players, most of them have net cash. They're not out there borrowing to do this. They're investing their own capital in terms of doing it. So, yeah, two-edged sword, yes. It's a good thing. Does that mean that you could start seeing them as time goes on, starting to leverage up a debt? Yes, that's one of the things we'll certainly be watching for, in terms of saying, okay, now we've got to be a bit more on alert for what can go wrong in terms of that. The other thing is, this has all been happening while we've got rising interest rates. So usually when you see these booms take off, especially the sort of more speculative booms, it's during a period of falling interest rates or low interest rates. And so, you know, the combination of both those, you know, an increase of debt in that sector and falling rates at some point, that's what you could really see a bubble sort of take off in this sector. So I guess where I'm coming to this from is there a bubble in AI? Yeah, there's a little bit. Is it particularly high? No, it's not. Could it get dramatically bigger? Absolutely. It can get way bigger than what it is. And NVIDIA in particular is sort of in this really interesting point where it's making so much, and I've made this point myself, is that the negative view on it is it's taking so much market share already. It's sort of 90% plus market share of a lot of these latest chips. There's demand for everything they're doing. There's a supply shortage. Their competitors aren't going to catch up to them, you know, anytime in the short term. On the flip side, there's only so much spending that's going to happen from, you know, we can see that the spending that's going on in the sort of, in the data centers and they're big players. They can try and drive costs down. They're all out trying to get new chips. It might not be, you know, as we get more capacity on, and then there's certainly capacity is being thrown at it. As we get more capacity, they'll be more content to rather than use one of the latest and greatest chips, to use two of the slightly older ones. So there's this you've got a negative part of it is, and maybe that growth will start to disappear, or, you know, maybe it'll come off the boil and it'll still keep growing, but just not at the rapid rates we've seen. You know, it's not going to be doubling and tripling. On the flip side is NVIDIA's starting to do some quite interesting things in terms of the way it's trying to couple together all the different components. And that's what I was talking about a little bit before, is there's this new model they're sort of starting to push, and it's potentially getting some traction, which is suggesting that, yeah, it's less now, it'll be less about saying, okay, I'm building a bunch of chips that all work well together, or I'm putting those chips into PCs that are and when they're working well with each other within PCs, you know, multiple different sort of versions of it. And it's now it's about saying, well, if I'm actually arraying together masses of servers and they're all sitting within data centers and I can control a lot of the factors around that, then maybe there's this new sort of model that will sort of emerge from it. And I'll pop up a quick slide of what they, you know, one of the things they were talking about is this idea that, so slightly confusing, but, you know, they've got these different bands. So you're looking at bandwidth in terms of the terabytes per second you can go. And so over you know, the first columns over the internet effectively, or over Ethernet, and sorry, Ethernet, not internet, and it's saying, yeah, you can sort of send 0.8. But if you're doing that sort of effectively, think of it within the computer, you can sort of do 7.2, so much higher, and then this HBM, which is sort of on the computer and within the chips, and sort of this new one about how you're talking, you've got chips talking with each other across within data centers, is you can get, you know, 36 or sort of maybe 40 times higher than that sort of Ethernet side. And then that means that your cost and your power efficiency is much better. They need to be really close to each other. And so you really get these massive benefits from it. And if they're right in terms of how they're looking at this, maybe there's another leg up for NVIDIA. Maybe there's another, and maybe you're looking at another quite dramatic event in terms of saying, you know, could you leave a lot of the old guard behind, or which of the new companies is going to be taking over from it already? The old, you know, Intel's obviously working as hard as well to in some of these sectors as well. Could you get one of the old guards sort of pop up again? And you know, I spoke a little bit about that history, but there's plenty of big companies. You know, IBM's probably the number one sort of from that were dominant in the sector, the major players, and then fell by the wayside. And so, yeah, it's absolutely possible can happen again. And I guess we're hitting this point where the technology is looking like we could be going to another one of these dramatic changes. The big one, I guess the elephant in the room I've sort of left behind is this whole geopolitics. And geopolitics has always been part of it. I spoke about the US, and the US guys were largely seeded out of defense spending at the start. So a lot of the lead they got in the 60s and 70s, 1960s and 1970s, was because of the defense spending, and they sort of drove that into to companies that would then try and get that out to businesses. Then we saw the rise through Japan, and Japan sort of ran that same type of thing where, you know, it was very much a government policy and subsidies and local champions and everything like that. And then we rolled into Korea and Taiwan with very similar types of modes. China is absolutely doing that, but we've got the US starting to push back with some of the CHIPS Acts come out. They're trying to onshore a lot of the production. This is sort of, I guess it's a ground zero for a whole host of these titanic forces that are sort of affecting this sector at the moment. So we're talking about, again, to take it back, you know, effectively the one of the biggest sectors on the planet, and biggest sectors in stock market portfolios being affected by a whole host of different, you know, factors all pushing it in different directions. And then, you know, outside of just the US and China, their own government policies, there's also policies in Europe. Japan's got their own. Korea, you know, there's lots of other countries that are also out there trying to subsidize. And so, you know, it's a matter of trying to work out which of the sectors where there's going to be so much competition and so much government money thrown at it that actually the companies there just aren't going to make any money. And then which are the other sectors where they're going through such big changes, and maybe this government spending is enough to really improve the margins or really help those margins within those companies. And so turn something that might have been a marginal project into something good that then sort of, you know, snowballs into something even bigger. So, I guess that part of this is saying, you know, you can't ignore this sector and you probably need some within your portfolios. If we're going to look at the current cycle, so there's this idea that there's these longer term CapEx cycles where people put on big factories and take them off. But if you look at the current cycle, this is from Fabricated Knowledge. He's a very good sort of blogger on a lot of this. So this is his view on what you're looking at. But, and some of the bigger sectors within it is that you've got this idea that you've got at that, as you go through your inventory cycles, your inventories decrease until you sort of hit the bottom. And so the inventories are really low. And at that point, you start getting sales increasing, and then sales increase too much. Your production increases too much and your sales don't increase enough. And so now your inventory starts to rise, and then people start to sell down their inventory, and you go back through that whole cycle again. And I guess what he's noting, and I think I'm largely on with most of the positions for this, but I think that the two up the top is pretty key in terms of, you know, automotive and industrial are very much in this space where sales are decreasing, inventories are still increasing, and so you're likely not quite close to the bottom yet. Some of the other ones, consumer and networking, your sales are sort of relatively static. Your inventories are decreasing though, so you're sort of going through that. Maybe you're getting close to the bottom, maybe you're not. Maybe there's further to go for those ones. And then some of these other ones where you're sort of talking AI in particular is, yeah, right at the end of sales increasing, inventories, no problems on the inventory front. Smartphones and PCs are maybe bottoming in terms of that front. There's certainly been some positive signs in the latest reporting season. And then the memory guys, memory looks like it's bottoming and heading up quite dramatically. And those guys are going to be really profitable for the next, you know, year or two. The thing is that the stock prices will really run as well in that sector. So a hugely volatile sector. So yeah, always a tough one trying to time those companies. I might just jump to a quick sales message.
We'll be back with the investment insights very shortly. Nucleus Wealth is an active and passive investment manager. If you like what you're hearing and want some help with your investing, we can do it for you via our active portfolios. Our tactical and core portfolios use the insights shared in this podcast to construct and manage your investment. We blend tactical portfolios to offer our combinations of international shares, Australian shares, government bonds, and cash. We vary the asset allocation with the goal of protecting your capital in times of market uncertainty. We also have active international and Australian share portfolios. These are chosen using our quality and value investment philosophy. You can find out more at nucleuswealth.com. Now back to the show. We'll be back again shortly. If you like what you're hearing but want a low-cost passive option, Nucleus Wealth is the first to offer passive direct indexing in Australia. The first generation of passive investing was index funds. The next gen was ETFs. Now, direct indexing is here with significantly more customization and control. The benefit of direct indexing is you can add or subtract investment themes, and we have almost 100 different options to choose from. For example, you could buy an international share direct index portfolio that excludes fossil fuels and arms manufacturers and has a tilt towards cybersecurity and cloud computing. Alternatively, you could buy a portfolio with no screens and an extra exposure to nuclear power and defense contractors. You can find out more at nucleuswealth.com. Now back to the show.
Right, so what does that mean for you as an investor? Well, I guess the key thing I want people to walk away from is just this idea that, look, maybe there is a bubble coming in this. And even if there's not, there is actually particularly strong growth fundamentally in a number of the elements of these stocks. But sort of a blanket, yeah, I'll just buy a bunch of everything, may or may not work. I think there is an element of this in terms of, you know, looking at prior cycles and saying IBM sort of leader, everyone buys IBM, you know, it's the greatest thing ever. You want exposure to the sector? Great, just buy some IBM. And then that's the stock that lost its market share and you know, one of the key ones losing out, I guess, in terms of as Japan rose. A whole bunch of Japanese companies sort of fell into the same boat as we saw the rise of Taiwan and Korea in terms of the chip manufacturing. The question is, are there other elements that are going to lose their way as China pushes more and more into this? And I'd certainly argue at the sort of lagging edge, so to speak, of this in terms of the chips that are the older chips and 10, 20-year-old chips that for things that just don't need the latest and greatest things. That's going to be a really tough market. China is going to throw plenty at it. You've companies in that are probably not going to make any money at all. And it could be very much like the solar, where you know, the rest of the world starts getting, companies around the rest of the world start going broke, and really will rely on government handouts in order to stay competitive with their with Chinese competitors. But at the leading edge of that, and the where China's, you know, effectively being cut out, and there's issues about can they actually can China compete? You know, can they even catch up? It will be a real key question about given the level of technology, the number of, you know, I showed you before about how many companies and how stratified the world is becoming, because each sort of part just needs some real specialization in whether it's the design software that designs the chips or some of the IP behind those base chips or the machines that make it, and even within the machines that make it, you know, ASML, which is, you know, one of the world's biggest, doesn't actually make most of the parts themselves. In a way, they're more of a it's more about their outsourcing to hundreds of other players and putting it all together into these big machines. So, you know, they've got somebody that's makes, you know, the flattest mirrors in the world type thing, and, you know, there's a couple of atoms difference as you run across a meter in terms of that, how flat these mirrors are, because they need to be so precise in order to do everything they're doing. Everything is so specialized that it's this real question about whether China can even get there into that. So anyway, so for my part, it is a little bit more about being a bit more active on these. But having said that, we've got a few sort of screens on ours that you can sort of add extra in terms of cloud computing or AI, some of the large techs and robotics and cybersecurity, some of the ones we have there. But it's going to be I guess the overall thing I just want to come back to is taking a sort of blind bet that yesterday's winners in this sector are going to be tomorrow's winners. In the past has failed time and time again as a strategy. And so, you know, if we look at the whole sector, you know, what are we seeing from an investment perspective? Look, it's a little bit expensive, but not horrendously so. If they outperform on the growth, and you know, NVIDIA has been outperforming on the growth, and a lot of these other companies have been as well, we could be, you know, you can catch that up really quickly. Like being a little bit expensive, and then the company grows 10% or 15% faster than you think, and all of a sudden it's not expensive anymore. Government subsidies are going to be big. You know, keep watching all those announcements as we keep seeing whether it's China or the US or Europe come out with, or Japan come out with what they're doing to support their industry and how much that's going to affect and distort the market. It's not a bubble yet, but, you know, if we go into a period of falling interest rates and we start seeing debt rising in that sector, there's plenty of scope for debt to rise. That could become a massive bubble. Not to say it will, but, you know, it's got all the ingredients you want. A good story, yeah, not much debt and lots of growth. The productivity growth is going to be real. It's going to, this from a lot of these factors, it's going to flow through the rest of society. It's going to take a little bit of time, and that's going to be a lot more gradual, but it's genuine. And when you get that genuine productivity growth, there's reasons to keep investing in this sector. So dangerous to be out of it. And we're certainly, you know, trying to pick the ones which we think are going to be winners within that, and so within our active portfolios. And I guess that's probably as much as I need to say for today. You know, just a reminder that we're on every week at 12:30 Sydney, Melbourne time. If you've got any questions, feel free to jump in and leave them on the podcast. We have got, we're on all the different, a whole bunch of different podcast platforms. So the Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple, you know, all the majors and most of the minors as well. You can get us on YouTube. And we're also on most of social media, so to like and subscribe, and I will see everyone next week for something more.